All right, everyone. Again, I welcome you to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Thank you for hanging out with us as we get ready to have our hearts open, our minds open, as we are enlightened about a very, very important topic, something that affects so many. It has to do with domestic trafficking. Our guest, yours and mine, is Ms. Ashley Cruz, and she is the one who's going to be really informing us about this problem, this issue, letting us know some things that we can possibly do about it. And Ashley, it is so good to have you with us. How are you doing?
I'm good, Carl. How are you?
I'm good as well, and I appreciate you joining me to talk about something that I know has affected so many people, but at the same time, a lot of people probably still are not really aware of, and that has to do with domestic trafficking. Before you begin to talk about domestic trafficking, though, Ashley, could you tell us some things about Ashley Cruz? And it can have to do with your professional background. It can have to do with your academic background, how these two may have dovetailed over the years and to bringing you where you are now as a professional working with domestic trafficking.
Sure. My name's Ashley Cruz. I'm the services coordinator at the Rape Crisis Center in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I kind of got into this field a little bit by accident. I do have my undergrad in sociology and a master's in forensic psychology. However, that was not the path I originally took. I was a captain in the Marine Corps, and I was a military police officer. I ended up getting selected to be an anti-terrorism and force protection officer in the Pacific in the Middle East. And one of my collateral duties was to be a victim advocate while I was there. And one of the duties that I had in my primary job was to make Marines aware of human trafficking and other risks that were involved in traveling throughout the Pacific and the Middle East. And that kind of married up with my victim advocacy role for sexual assault on the other side of my work program. And together, I kind of learned a little bit about international trafficking through those areas of the world when I was over there. When I came back, I managed to come on to Rape Crisis, and I got to see a different side of things from the domestic perspective. And domestic trafficking and international trafficking are quite a bit different. Things look a lot different in the different countries that you go through, primarily for laws, culture. There's a lot of different factors that come into it, but domestic trafficking here, what we're seeing, especially on the East Coast and the Georgia, South Carolina area, is very much different than what I was seeing over in the Asian Pacific area and the Middle East. So it kind of struck my fancy. I think what a lot of people think of, especially with sex trafficking, is not exactly accurate, and that hurts being able to identify it when it does come up. Even a lot of the survivors and victims, and I apologize, I do use the term interchangeably an awful lot, and I don't mean to offend anybody. It's just kind of the terms that I use when I talk about this. They tend not to be able to identify their situation themselves, maybe because they're too close into it. But it's a little bit more of a struggle, and people not being able to identify it because of lack of education is another problem I see in the U.S., and that's something that we're trying to combat. So thank you for having me today.
Oh, my pleasure. And so part of the challenge then is getting things to a point where the person who actually is a victim of trafficking recognizes that they themselves are a victim of trafficking?
Yes. Domestic violence plays a huge role in human trafficking, particularly when it comes to sex trafficking. And getting somebody to identify that they're in a domestic violence-type relationship is a little bit easier, and then usually we'll work from there when we see the elements of a human trafficking crime being committed.
So domestic violence, this is something that may or may not include a marital relationship. It may be a dating relationship.
Yeah, it could be a dating, it could be a casual encounter. From what we hear a lot of times when we're doing our intakes and we hear their stories, it usually relates to a confusion between being a boyfriend or a father figure, somebody who is taking on a role of caring and loving in the beginning, hearing them, you know, listening to their problems and being there for them, and then that relationship starts to evolve over time into something very negative.
You know, I was reading about some comments by this one gentleman who identified himself as a former pimp. And he talked about how when he would begin his relationships with females, younger or older, whichever, he would do some of the very things you talked about. He would tell them that he loved them. He would talk about how eventually they were going to get married. And he just knew, he said, because he had been in fact, I think his father had been a pimp. His mother and grandmother had been prostitutes. He knew just how to target women, which women to target. And once he had targeted them and started in on them, he knew how to reel them in. And a lot of it had to do with just making them feel special, et cetera. And that's what you're saying is happening a lot of the times, whether it's someone who's like a boyfriend figure or a father figure. It's that some kind of need is being met or allegedly, supportedly being supposedly being met that kind of draws the woman in.
That's absolutely right. And the generational aspect of it is something we really do see a lot of around here. People are born into this and they grow up in this environment. It's all they know. And they really become experts of their trade. And one of the big issues when it comes to combating human trafficking and making people aware enough to be able to avoid it is the time that's invested in it. The average age for a trafficker to target is 12 to 14 years old. Kids at that age, they really just want somebody to hear them out. They tend to have conflict in their personal lives and at home, at school, and they just want a friend. Somebody will sit there and listen to them. And when that is the actual career choice of a trafficker, they have, 8 to 12 hours a day to just sit and listen to whatever they want to talk about, because that's their job, that's their task at hand, is to woo this person and groom them into trusting them. And, I mean, really, no parents and grandparents and guardians and friends, nobody really has 8 to 12 hours a day to listen to somebody without any interruption. It's just not how life goes. So when these people with these horrible intentions do have this time, it's really easy to manipulate somebody, especially at that age, into trusting them.
And so one of the potential warning signs for a person who may be an intended victim of trafficking is to recognize that if a person is giving them so much more time than the typical person, the average person, can possibly give, that may be a warning sign that they may be up to something not good.
And it's possible, and I hate to put out too many warning signs to make people really nervous and suspicious, but it never hurts to just kind of ask the question, like, what is this person gaining from giving me all this extra attention? And it may not necessarily be trafficking. If they're giving you that much attention, it could be leading to a stalking situation or a whole variety of other things. If this person doesn't have anything else going on in their life, there's probably something underneath the surface to be concerned about and at least explore.
And at least explore. So that said, Ashley, break down for us what is going on when we talk about trafficking. What is that really about?
So trafficking can take a couple of different forms. Primarily what we look at as far as a crime goes is human sex trafficking and labor trafficking. And sometimes they overlap. In many cases, they do. But sex trafficking is selling a person for sex purposes with a way of gaining for the person who's doing the trafficking. And that gain doesn't necessarily have to be financial. It can be street cred, it can be drugs, it can be pretty much anything that they consider a gain to themselves, and it has to have the elements of force, fraud, and coercion. And those elements are really what are necessary to charge this crime and what makes it different than some other crimes that may be considered. And it's the same thing with labor trafficking. Instead of sex, selling the person for sex, it's selling the person for labor or using them for labor and not giving them a fair reimbursement for that labor, and that goes with the sex trafficking as well. So they could be reimbursed, they could be paid for their time and the services that they're rendering, however, it's not a fair price. So if they're paying well under the minimum wage for somebody who's being labor trafficked, and they're not able to choose to leave that situation, then that would be trafficking. And that also concerns the elements of forced fraud and coercion. That's something we like to talk about a lot because those are really important. So I tend to focus heavily on sex trafficking. One, that's just what a lot of people are interested in hearing about. And two, I work at a rape crisis center, so that's really what we focus on heavily. So with sex trafficking, there's a difference between being a prostitute or a sex worker by choice and being trafficked. If you're a sex worker, then you willingly participate in this. This is something you choose to do. You're in control of who is buying your services. You're in control of your own money, and you can stop at any time that you want to. Now, if you're a sex trafficking victim, then there's elements of forced fraud or coercion being used against you. Now, force is what most people think of when they think of human trafficking. That's being kidnapped, grabbed, chained up, injected with drugs, or a whole variety of other very forceful, aggressive things, being beaten. So that's actually not the common method. Movies like the movie Taken and other similar things that are put out in Hollywood, that's not really what we're seeing in the domestic sense here in the U.S. Fraud and coercion are extremely heavily used, and that's what we were just talking about with the relationship confusion. Mm-hmm. You use fraud, these false promises, maybe blackmail, start taking pictures as like kids are sexting, and people get a hold of those pictures. They can use that as blackmail against them to make them do things that they don't want to do, they feel like they have to do. And that's when we start looking at fraud and coercion. And then there's also the age element as well. The age of consent in South Carolina is 16, but you cannot consent to selling your own body as a sex worker until after the age of 18, which is a little confusing because sex work is also illegal, but it's a different crime. So anybody under the age of 18 that is selling their body for sex or being sold by somebody else is considered a human trafficking victim. But over the age of 18, there is a delineation between sex work and sex trafficking.
And so when you have the force, fraud, and coercion factors involved, do you have people, are you primarily looking at males who are perpetrating the force, et cetera? Do you also find that females are sometimes involved in the force, fraud, and coercion of these victims?
That's a fantastic question, and that's actually one of my favorite facts about trafficking, especially in the U.S., is it's really the only major crime that equally represents females as an offender as much as males. Young women and pretty much anybody, young women, young men, they both trust women more. Inherently in our society, women tend to commit less aggressive and violent crimes, and they're usually just in generally more trustworthy, especially when it's coming from a stranger. Now, with trafficking, women are very highly represented at about 49% of the offenders, and that's because a lot of them, they get raised through the system. They may be born to a trafficker or a prostitute, like in the story you were talking about, or they may have just been groomed at a very young age, and as they grow up, they can move from lower man or the lower man on the totem pole, where they're actually the ones out performing the sex task or the labor task, to being a recruiter so that they don't have as much of a high quota and they don't have to, you know, use their body as much. They bring in new people to be used. And that really, that makes them a higher representation in this crime.
Our guest, everyone, is Ms. Ashley Cruz. She is helping us understand what is going on with regards to trafficking, particularly sex trafficking. And here's our hope that as she enlightens us, our hearts will be moved to find out what we can do about the situation. She and I will be right back.